Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as always, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Pai Mei taught you the five-point palm exploding heart technique? I nearly got Chris to spit on that one.
I thought, I'll take one last sip of water before I start to talk. And, of course, Jonathan tried to sabotage me.
Okay, so before we get into this, we have a little listener mail. This listener mail comes from Zayed, who says, "Hello, I'm a big fan and I just finished listening to your episode about iPods, and I was wondering if you could do one on the history of Palm or BlackBerry, two of the older smartphone companies that are still running but are being hidden in popularity by the iPhone or Android. Hope you can do an episode on one of these. Big fan, Zayed." Well, Zayed, we're going to tackle one of those two today. We're going to actually talk about Palm.
Yes, indeed. Now, I have a little bit of a history with Palm. We'll talk about that in a moment, but I certainly, I had a few years where I was actually using, one of their, PDAs or, PDAs.
Personal digital assistants.
Yeah, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. I always think of public display of affection when I hear PDA.
Yeah,
sorry.
I did a lot of those in the 90s.
All right,
then. Not the personal digital assistant, but the other one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
hello,
yeah.
Ladies.
Palm actually has, I'm sorry to use this pun, changed hands several times, but it was founded as an independent company back with when Jeff Hawkins started the company in 1992 and got Ed Colligan and Donna Dubinsky to work with him. And I should point out that I got a lot of my information from a really great, concise timeline that I found by James Nicolai and Nancy Goering of IDG.
Yes, same here.
Yeah, so if you really want to see the concise, straightforward, you know, this is when it began, this is when it ended, and here's all the stuff in between, they have an awesome time frame. But I think we could put a lot of context around this, because at the time, in 1992, there wasn't really a whole lot out there like the Palm handheld computer, and in fact, it would be a little while before Palm actually came out with a device.
Right. In fact, when the company first launched in 92, there really were no consumer personal digital assistants on the market. If you had a PDA, you were either an early adopter or you were some executive who had invested in this, and they were few and far between. So originally, Hawkins and company were working with other companies to try and produce some PDAs. In point of fact, they were working specifically with Tandy and Casio. But those initial efforts proved unsuccessful. The hardware they produced did not take off in the market.
Now, don't get the idea that this was the first PDA of any kind,
right?
The one that Palm released. I mean, people will be quick to point out that the Apple Newton was announced in '92 as well and came out in '93. Plus, you know, there were many other companies. My father actually worked for as a mechanical engineer. He worked for an electronics manufacturer that came out with a very specialized handheld device that ended up being used by shipping companies. So, you know, this is specific. We're just talking specifically about Palm. So we're not saying this is the first one. But the first one actually launched after the company got acquired the very first time.
Yeah. We should point out before we get really involved in this.
Oh, yes.
Palm's history, you know, you mentioned it changed hands several times, the whole pun thing.
Yes.
It gets really complex.
It really does.
Because we're talking about acquisitions, spinoffs, reacquisitions, failures. It's a dramatic story. And you may not seem so just on the offset, because you're thinking, oh, well, it's just a technology company. Like any other, it builds these products. But the story really is one of, it goes beyond technology into the whole politics of how corporations deal with one another with mergers and acquisitions. So, yeah, the first acquisition happened in 1995. So we're talking just 3 years after the founding of the company. And keep in mind, the company at this point had not produced a successful PDA. But the people behind it were very well versed in building the kind of infrastructure you need. We're talking like programming infrastructure you need to create a successful PDA. They weren't necessarily building hardware, but they were building kind of the firmware that exists on the hardware that allows a PDA to be possible. So that's when U.S. Robotics came along. U.S. Robotics was a computer modem company, and they purchased Palm for $44 million.
Yep. Around this time, U.S. Robotics was one of the leading, I would say arguably leading, modem manufacturers. They were one of the first to market with a 56 kilobyte per second, I know, stop laughing, modem. As a matter of fact, the company I work for, the internet service provider I used to work for, used U.S. Robotics technology in its points of presence, basically your local dial-up modem pool. And U.S. Robotics acquired Palm in an attempt to diversify somewhat.
Yeah, I also want to point out, so the $44 million price point, this is going to become a running theme in this show too, because I did this for everything except this first one, and I just did it now. Adjusted for inflation in 2010, because that's the latest I can get,
right?
It would be $62,955,511. So that's a good chunk of change for a company that had yet to produce a really successful or really any successful hardware. So, yeah, a year later, in 96, U.S. Robotics introduces the Palm Pilot 1000.
Yes, I remember that. Executives everywhere, at least in the United States, really liked this thing. It was the first PDA that I really saw a lot of in offices. I joined that technology company I just mentioned in 1996, and you know, by early 1997, I noticed a lot of the company directors had these Palm Pilots, and they were just really popular, mainly because of the software. The software behind it, as Jonathan mentioned earlier, was a great package of software. It allowed you to do all kinds of things, keep mm-hmm. track of your calendar. It would sync with your computer. Maybe not necessarily. I don't know if the Palm Pilot 1000 allowed you to do that, to be honest.
I think so.
But yeah. So, I mean, you could keep track of everything. You didn't have to carry that big old paper planner with you everywhere. You had this small handheld device that you could, you know, throw in your bag or throw in your pocket. It was much more, for one thing, it was much more convenient. For another thing, it just looked cool.
Yeah, and you could have like a virtual Rolodex on there, so you could keep a list of all your contacts. Now, this might sound very familiar to a lot of our listeners. It sounds a lot like a smartphone, and in many ways, it's sort of the predecessor for smartphones. It's just you got to leave one minor component out, the phone part.
Yes, so it was just a smart.
Yeah, it was just smart, which obviously that's why Palm was so successful early on, because it was smart.
Yes.
But no, the idea here is, of course, that you've got a device that manages your information in a very portable way. So also remember, in the mid-90s, it's not that laptop computers didn't exist. They did. Mm-hmm. But they were heavy, heavy device. They were not what you would consider easily portable for the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember my wife had a laptop computer, which actually was built a few years before this, because she had it when we were first dating, which was a few years before this. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to date it too much. But anyway, I remember that the laptop was so heavy, it would hurt your lap to put it on. It was not really a laptop.
Yeah.
It was a desktop. It was just a portable desktop.
Right.
So, yeah, and this time you needed something. If you were someone who was going to be traveling a lot and you wanted to be able to look at your calendar and you didn't want to have to deal with lots of paper, this was a great solution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was in 1996. In 97, we get another change in ownership.
Yes, 3Com.
Right.
The makers of, well, they made all kinds of different technology goodies. One of my favorites was after the Palm acquisition was an internet appliance called the Audrey, which lasted about 15-20 minutes on the marketplace before 3Com decided to discontinue it. But it was pretty neat, at least pretty neat looking.
That just makes me think of a little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, the 3Com was a pretty savvy company, and they said, well, you know, this is obviously going to take off. They got in at the right time because Palm had started to make its ascent into popularity. And as a matter of fact, they went ahead and had the first developer conference.
Right.
For people to develop software. Now, I feel compelled to point out, too, that like today's smartphones, the Palm operating system allowed you to install software from third parties.
Right.
So it's not you weren't limited to just the software that was on the phone.
Yeah, bundled stuff.
You could buy stuff from mm-hmm. other people.
Yeah, and really, we hear developer conference all the time now. But back yeah. then, it was a pretty novel idea. You know, now you'll hear developer conferences from especially like Google, Microsoft, and Apple.
Yeah.
They are known for them in particular, although other companies, of course, also do developer conferences, including Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all sorts of platforms do them now because, of course, applications run on pretty much anything you can think of. You know, refrigerators and microwaves pretty soon, ovens as well. And
yes.
I'm not even exaggerating because at CES I saw a lot of that.
We should do a podcast on the Internet of Things at some point.
Yeah.
Because that's interesting, too.
So when 3Com's acquisition was not just for Palm, 3Com actually mm-hmm. acquired U.S. Robotics, which was Palm's parent company at that time. So
that's right.
So you think of Palm as a little fish, and U.S. Robotics was a slightly bigger fish, and 3Com was an even bigger fish.
That's true. That's true. And again, it acted at the right time. It saw an ascending company. U.S. Robotics at that point had pretty sophisticated modem technology.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't really in the broadband era at that point.
No, we're still in dial-up.
So this was a good acquisition for them.
Yeah.
Or at least that's the way it appeared at the time.
Right, right. So in 1998, This was a very eventful year and a very dramatic year in Palm's history. For one thing, the Palm Computing sued Microsoft.
Yes.
Because Microsoft was marketing the Palm PC. Right. And of course, Palm was saying this creates confusion in the marketplace because our company name is Palm and you've called your product the Palm PC. We're in the same sphere of devices, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So they made the argument that that was brand confusion. It was infringing on their trademarks. So Microsoft kind of backed off and changed the name to be Palm Size PC as
right.
opposed to just Palm PC. But that same year saw some dramatic shakeups in the company because the founders, and Jeff Hawkins, Donna Dubinsky, and Ed Colligan, they decided to leave the company and mm-hmm. found another company called Handspring.
Yes.
Because they were not comfortable in the direction the company was going in under 3Com's leadership.
Yes.
So you've got the founders of the company who are no longer happy with the way the company's going. We've actually seen this story before, too.
Yes, we have.
There's a very famous example with Steve Jobs.
That's true.
Who he was, Steve Jobs was a founder of Apple. And in the during the course of Apple's existence, when it got bigger and bigger, Steve Jobs was at some point kind of shuffled to the side
mm-hmm.
and almost ignored. In fact, saying ignored is probably not being too – it's not really hyperbole. And so Steve Jobs left Apple only to return later. So this story is not uncommon. It has happened before. But it's a pretty big event in any company's life when the founders, jump ship and create a new company because they don't like the direction of their original company.
Mm-hmm.
So Handspring begins to produce PDAs and smartphones that are operating on the Palm's system. So they're still working with Palm,
mm-hmm.
but they are not working for Palm.
Right. That actually is my introduction to the Palm world, because I didn't actually have a Palm product. I bought a Handspring Visor Deluxe, which is one of two original models of the Handspring. You had the Visor and the Visor Deluxe. The Deluxe
right.
was cool because you had something that the Palm machines didn't have, which was a slot, a hardware slot. If you think of it like an old-style cartridge video game console, the Visor Deluxe allowed you to – there was basically a dummy – thing in there to keep dust and dirt from getting out there. So you pop out the little piece of plastic and you can snap in a cartridge that would allow you to run software from that cartridge, and it would give you access to do things that you couldn't do with the software that you would load by connecting it and syncing it with your computer. Now, of course, we're not in the days of Wi-Fi yet. So this is every time you sync information with your computer, you're doing it with a cable,
right?
Plugged in directly to your computer or through a dock,
right?
Which is very popular with executives because you have that on the side of the computer and it looks very snazzy.
Nice.
I'm
usually the only one who does voices. This is great.
But yeah, it was certainly a cool accessory to have on your cool looking accessory to have on your desk, and you would sync that information. Well, this slot was really cool, and it's something that set Handspring apart, and of course. Although the three founders left Palm, it wasn't completely acrimonious because they didn't say, well, we're leaving, we're taking our football with us, and we're going home and doing
right.
our own thing. They actually licensed the Palm OS
right.
to run on the Handspring. So they were still sort of cousins, although
yeah.
they were different, completely different corporate organizations. They still had a working relationship with each other.
Yeah, they're the cousin you don't like so much, but come on, they're still family. and the Visor was just one of two big lines of products that Handspring produced. The other one is arguably much more famous.
Oh, it's considerably more famous, but that wasn't what happened immediately.
No, but not that long after they founded Handspring, they started to produce the
Trio. That's T-R-E-O.
Yeah, the Trio line of products, which if you pay attention to tech journalists who have been in the business for, a decade or more, actually, I guess it's got to be longer than that now.
Yeah.
But you'll hear the word Trio thrown around a lot as, like, I know that, say, Rafe Needleman of CNET.
Yes.
He hung on to his Trio for far longer than most of us would hold on to a piece of technology, you know, using it every day, because he loved that device. He loved the hardware and the software integration. And Trio, of course, will play another part of the story a little further down. So we've got Handspring operating more or less outside the realm of Palm. I mean, it's still licensing the operating system, but otherwise it's its own thing. Mm-hmm. So in 1999, we have another interesting development. 3Com decides to spin off Palm Computing and make it a subsidiary company. It's essentially its own standalone company now.
Yes.
And this is the company that that is essentially creating the operating system.
Right.
So mm-hmm. you've got the one company creating the operating system, and then you've got Handspring, which is doing hardware and using that operating system.
Well, of course, 3Com had still been making the Palm hardware. They introduced the Palm 7 also in 1999, which was the first with its with a wireless antenna built in.
Right. And how much did that cost?
That was $599.
$784 in today's dollars. I wasn't kidding about that. I was going to do that all the way through.
Apparently.
No.
So, yeah, I mean, they're still making stuff, but now you have competition in the marketplace for the hardware.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got 3Com spinning Palm off. It's basically 3Com's star business at that point.
Right, yeah. Actually, at that point, the Palm section of 3Com's business was probably the highest performing as far as revenue generation is concerned.
Yeah, yeah. And then again in 2000, the separation was complete.
Right.
They decided to, and they went off on their own. And a couple of years ago, we really do see the separation of hardware and software with the introduction of a group called PalmSource. Again, I remember this pretty well because I wasn't certain how this was going to work out with my Handspring, which I used for several years. Again, mm-hmm. it worked great. But you'd have to, instead of going to palm.com, you would have to go to the PalmSource website to learn more about the operating system and updates and things like that. And this might seem a bit surprising, but Sony plunked down $20 million.
$24,241,801 in today's currency.
Which is the first company outside, one of the acquiring companies, to make an investment in the Palm operating system. Because, for their handhelds, Sony also licensed the Palm operating system.
Yeah.
So they were sort of, I guess you would think of them as the Windows of the, except for the fact that there was actually a Windows. But,
right.
Yeah, I mean, they were the company licensing the operating system for many, many different companies' handhelds.
Right. And back in 2000, I know we moved on from that, but I just wanted to mention, the interesting thing about Palm going public in 2000
uh-huh.
is that was right in the middle of the dot-com bubble.
Yes.
And you know, the dot-com bubble and the dot-com crash, of course, played a very important part in many companies. But in Palm, it really helped them out because the IPO, the initial public offering, was right there in the middle of the dot-com bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And at the height, Palm shares sold for more than $95 a share, yeah. $120 in today's money.
Oh.
Has good, it gotten old yet?
Good fun.
Because I've got a few more years to go.
So in 2002 also,
yes.
This is the introduction of our other competitor, which we're not going to get into right this minute, but this is when BlackBerry came out from Research in Motion. Research in Motion. There
right.
we go.
So the BlackBerry smartphone hits the market in 2002. Keep in mind that at this point, the Palm devices, a lot of them are still PDAs, not phones.
That's true. And I also want to add, I think, that in the late 90s and early 2000s was when you would start seeing the Palm and Handspring devices at your local electronics store and in some cases discount department stores.
Mm.
So they were making their way into consumer hands, which is, and the reason I thought to say that just now is because of Research in Motion in the BlackBerry, because the BlackBerry is often thought of as an enterprise gadget. So
right.
basically for business people,
yeah,
to do business
America.
Work. And Palm had made that crossover. My wife, in fact, had gotten a a Palm PDA, a black and white Palm PDA when they were still making those, because they had gotten to be inexpensive. They ended up being around $99, you know, so they were pretty affordable.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have necessarily a lot of the variety. You wouldn't have the color. You wouldn't have a lot of the functionality, but you'd have the Palm operating system in black and white. And really, for a lot of people, that's all they needed.
Yeah, and I knew quite a few people who had PDAs, especially the folks with the Atlanta Radio Theater Company. A lot of them had them. But then again, the Atlanta Radio Theater Company had a lot of people who, you'd think radio theater, that's an old
sure.
technology. But it turns out the people who are interested in it, not just the actors, but also, you know, of course, the engineers and everyone, mm-hmm. They also tend to fall into the early adopter sphere.
Really interesting.
So quite a few of them had PDAs back when they were fairly, you know, new on the scene. And by this mm-hmm. time, almost, you know, I'd say a sizable percentage of them
yeah.
had them.
Yeah. Okay.
So in 2003, this is where we start to see the companies come back together again.
Yes. Well, sort of.
Kind
because
of.
It's funny because, you know, we had Palm on its own. Then U.S. Robotics acquired Palm.
Then 3Com
acquired U.S. Robotics. Then the founders left to start Handspring.
Right.
Then 3Com coughed Palm back up.
Right. And then there was a subsidiary for the operating system. So
right.
so now there's a Palm company and a Palm operating system, Palm One.
And then Handspring agreed to be acquired by Palm.
Right. So now we see the founders essentially returning to the company because Palm decides announces that it's going to acquire Handspring. And so now you've got a hardware company. That's Palm One. I'm sorry. I said Palm One when I meant Palm Source. Palm One is the hardware company. And then they officially spin off Palm Source, which is the operating system company. So you've got two companies under mm-hmm. the Palm name, one
yep.
doing hardware, one doing the operating system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you start seeing the Palm Trio. So it's no longer the Handspring Trio coming out. The
right.
Palm Trio starts to come out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So 2005.
2005, the CEO of Palm One, Todd Bradley, leaves the company, and Ed Colligan, one of the founders of Palm, takes over in his stead. Palm Source had the rights to the brand name. So Palm One, the hardware company, bought it, which is really weird.
Yeah.
So, you know, but...
Right. You got subsidiaries buying... Yeah, this is where it really gets confused. This, like I said, it really shows you how complicated corporate America can get.
Yes.
Or just corporations in general. It's not just limited to America, obviously.
And I bet he's got this one, too. Yes. In the process of acquiring the brand name, the Palm One acquired 55% of the Palm Trademark Holding Company for $30
million. $33,495,391 today.
Yeah. And in a pretty significant departure, one which I was completely shocked by at the time, the trio running Windows mobile software was announced. And
yeah.
I thought that was absolutely strange after the Palm operating system had such a significant share of the market that Palm One would release a device with the Windows mobile operating system.
Yeah, this is kind of like, to explain Chris's surprise, think of it like this. Imagine if Apple were to announce that it was going to release a version of the iPhone 4 running Android.
Yeah.
That would be the kind of surprise. You'd think, what? That doesn't make sense. I mean, it's the Apple iPhone. Why isn't it running the Apple operating system? Well, that was the kind of reaction that people had when they heard that the Palm devices were going to run Windows Mobile because Palm devices ran Palm operating system. It kind of, they went together.
Yeah, I had the same sort of double take when Apple announced that it would allow people to use Boot Camp. So, hey, you can, you know, load Windows on your Mac.
And right.
Why would... Well, okay.
Yeah, and to let you guys know, there were only, I think, four smartphones released by Palm that ran Windows Mobile.
Yeah, it was a very small sliver of their product lineup, but it was
there were versions of the Trio that ran Windows Mobile as opposed to the Palm operating system, which you could argue that could also cause confusion within the marketplace.
Well, also we should point out too that in this time, this is the mid 2000s now, we're getting up to very close to the release of some big competitor, and the Palm OS is getting really dated by this point.
Right.
It was very, very popular. You'll still find support for it in many products. I know that Ubuntu even has a Palm Sync client still available. There are clients available for the others too, but, I mean, it's baked into the software. The thing is, at this point, other competitors are starting to show that they've got a grip on smartphone software and PDA functionality,
particularly
that they didn't have before. BlackBerry was certainly giving them a run for their money. Windows Mobile was starting to take over some market share,
right?
And I think that was a move that said, okay, well, we're going to have to do something about the operating system. Of course, it also showed the world that they might be considering other options.
Yeah, in 2007. That was another big year for Palm, and unfortunately not in a good way. Palm had tried to get into trying to launch a new market. There was a product called the Folio, which was at the time referred to as a sub-notebook. Now, later on, we would refer to these kind of products as netbooks. Essentially, it was undersized notebook-style computer, clamshell-style computer. And it had a smaller keyboard, smaller screen, more limited operating system, and it was kind of ahead of its time. And as a result, before it even had a chance to launch, I think within 3 months of announcing the product, Palm pulled the plug and said, you know what, we're not going to release the Folio after all, which is funny. I mean, I actually read a hands-on review of the Folio because Engadget got a hold of one. So Engadget ran a review, just kind of a really quick review, and they said it wasn't a very compelling device, and they would have preferred a new smartphone running a snazzier operating system to a notebook that they felt was underpowered. And it even had Wi-Fi and Bluetooth capability, but it just never made it to market. After 3 months of, like I said, 3 months after they announced it, they pulled the plug. The focus was supposed to be put back onto the smartphone market.
Right.
Well, that year, 2007, was another big year in the smartphone market because a juggernaut hit the scene.
That would be Apple's iPhone.
Yes, Apple's iPhone, which we all know has completely redefined the smartphone market. Just as the iPod redefined the MP3 market, the iPhone redefined the smartphone market. Whether you think the iPhone is a great device or if you just don't get it or whatever, you cannot deny that the iPhone has had a huge impact. The App Store alone has totally changed the playing ground for smartphones because everyone has to have an App Store now.
Yep, including Windows and BlackBerry and now Palm.
And it's extending also beyond smartphones, but
yes,
that's neither here nor there.
Yep. Yeah, in 2009, Ed Colligan finally left Palm. He was the last one of the original founders.
Yeah, the others had already left before then.
But that was also the year that the Palm Pre came out, and that's the first of the new Palm smartphones. It's running on Palm's newest operating system, the WebOS.
Or WebOS.
I prefer WebOS. But, massive critical acclaim.
Yeah.
People like it.
I was at that Consumer Electronics Show in 2009 when Palm debuted the Palm Pre. And it was one of the biggest buzz generators on the floor. Everyone thought that this was an amazing device. It was such a huge leap from what Palm had been doing before.
Yeah.
And it looked like a smooth and sleek operating system. It had a really nice user interface. Everyone thought that it was a worthy competitor to other smartphones on the market.
Yep.
Keep in mind, this was just when Google Android was, Google Android had only been available for a couple of months.
Yeah.
When Palm unveiled this, the iPhone had been out for 2 years, And people were saying this may be a real competitor. But unfortunately, there was no announced date for or there was no announcement for a release date, rather,
yeah,
for the Palm Pre at CES. By the time Palm did release the Pre, which was in late spring of that year, almost summer, a lot of the buzz had died down.
Yeah.
And that excitement, that initial excitement of everyone thinking, wow, this is really a compelling device, by that time it kind of just gone away because, you know, people hadn't, it was out of sight, out of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so it launched and people still said, you know, this is a good device. It's a worthy smartphone. It just did not have the mind share. And I hate that term, but you know, it's yeah, appropriate. It just didn't have that kind of level of excitement that it had back when they first announced it. And, it did not do well as a result.
Yep. Yep. As a matter of fact, in March of last year, recording this in the early part of 2011, in March 2010, Palm had to announce as a public company that they had lost $22
million. $22 million in today's money.
in its most recent quarter. And basically, it was made obvious that things were just not working out and they were going to need a little help. And in April, late April of 2010, Hewlett-Packard, HP, said that it was going to gobble Palm up.
For how much? $1.2 billion.
So, yes.
That's amazing. And if you remember, in the winter of 2009, a certain podcaster by the name of Jonathan Strickland made a prediction that Palm would either die or be acquired in the year 2010.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to save face from recent events that have ruined my predictions for this year.
And I have a small footnote. We need to wrap it up, but I have a small footnote for you. Did you know who was considered a semi-game changer that HP acquired before it acquired Palm?
No, who?
In late 2009, HP acquired 3Com.
Interesting.
I'd forgotten that. I started thinking, wait, somebody acquired 3Com. Who was it? I looked it up. It was HP, and they finally completed the acquisition in April of 2010.
So together again. So,
together again at last. And hopefully now a lot of people are speculating as to what HP is going to really do with that WebOS. But
yeah,
I don't think any tech journalist who has paid any attention to it would say that the WebOS and Palm are dead. They are still going to do something. But,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it takes a while to, once an acquisition happens, to really digest what's going on. But
We suspect that we'll probably see the web OS appearing on tablets and mm-hmm. maybe some netbooks, and maybe smartphones in the future as well. Smartphones are that's the longest bet for most people right now, just because HP is not really known as a smartphone company. But it's, you know, we've seen products that are running the web OS or mm-hmm. said to soon be running the web OS kind of appear in rumors and. But yeah, there's nothing really concrete yet.
Yeah, so it'll be. I'm interested to see what will come out since the WebOS has been so acclaimed. I'm looking forward to the possibility that there's going to be another viable competitor in the marketplace, and we're all going to get cooler gadgets.
Yeah, and other companies need to heed the story of Palm because Palm was very instrumental in shaping the way smartphones launched in the United States.
Yes,
and you know, it's a good lesson to learn that you might be the thing, like the central pivotal company of a particular movement, but within a decade's time, you may, you know, find yourself really floundering. So, I mean, there are many lessons to learn from Palm's story. And with that, we're going to wrap this up. If you guys have any comments on Palm, if you are a proud owner of a Palm device, or you have your own predictions for what's going to happen with Palm's WebOS, you can let us know. You can let us know on Twitter or Facebook. Our handle there is TechStuffHSW. Or you can shoot us an email, and that address is TechStuff@HowStuffWorks.com. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.